9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The U.S. considers new steps to cut off China from the cloud. Plus, Meta prepares to take on Twitter with a conversation app of its own.
Musk has said that most advertisers have returned or will be returning, but if even some significant portion of them go to Threads instead, it would be a rounding error for Meta, but a big hit to Twitter's quest to be profitable.
And the end of affirmative action heats up debates about workplace diversity programs. It's Wednesday, July 5th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We are exclusively reporting that the Biden administration is preparing to restrict Chinese companies from accessing U.S. cloud computing services. That is according to people familiar with the situation who said that if the proposed rule goes into effect, Amazon and Microsoft might need to seek government permission before providing cloud services that used advanced AI chips to Chinese customers. Our Beijing bureau chief Jonathan Cheng explains how the U.S. proposal could affect relations with China.
The move by Washington makes sense in this regard. If you're going to block Chinese companies from accessing AI chips, you don't want them to be able to piggyback off U.S. companies that are using these AI chips. And so that's really the intent here. But how it fits into the larger U.S.-China relationship right now, of course, is that it adds more tension and more signs of decoupling or de-risking, basically putting up more barriers to the two sides working together in any sort of economic way. What's interesting, too, about the timing is that it comes right before Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, is set to land in Beijing. Part of the message from Beijing when Janet Yellen gets here is that economic cooperation is necessary. But I think that this will add to that sense in Beijing that the U.S. is finding every way to suppress its economy and keep it from developing.
The Commerce Department, which has been implementing the U.S. semiconductor export control policy, declined to comment, and neither Microsoft nor Amazon had any immediate comment on the potential action. A judge has ordered the federal government to limit its communications with social media companies about online content after ruling that Biden administration officials' policing of social media posts likely violated the First Amendment. The judge also barred them from contacting social media companies with the purpose of suppressing political views and other speech that's normally protected from government censorship. The injunction came in a lawsuit that was led by the Republican Attorneys General of Missouri and Louisiana. A spokesman for the Justice Department declined to comment on the ruling. In a brief previously filed with the court, the department denied the plaintiffs' allegations and said the federal government took necessary and responsible actions to deal with a pandemic and foreign attempts at election interference. Twitter is facing renewed pressure after the platform took the unusual step of limiting the number of posts that its users could read late last week. Since then, upstart social media companies Blue Sky and Spill have been inundated with new interest, and WSJ Tech reporter Sam Schechner says that tomorrow, Meta is expected to launch its own rival app, dubbed Threads.
This could be a major threat to Twitter. Twitter has seen its revenue fall significantly since Elon Musk took over. In 2021, the company recorded about $5 billion in revenue, mostly from selling ads. Elon Musk has suggested that that figure dropped to $3 billion in 2022. So far this year, in Twitter's global ad revenue in the start of the second quarter was down about 40% compared with a year ago. Now, Musk has said that most advertisers have returned or will be returning, but if even some significant portion of them go to Threads instead, it would be a rounding error for Meta, but a big hit to Twitter's quest to be profitable.
Israeli troops have withdrawn from the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. That could bring an end to several days of intense fighting there that the Israeli military said saw heavy damage inflicted on militant groups. However, Journal Middle East correspondent Stephen Kalin told me it's unclear what the long-term effects of the operation will be.
There was overnight also an exchange of fire from Gaza. Several rockets were fired from the Gaza Strip towards southern Israel. They were all intercepted, and the Israelis fired back, attacking what they said was a Hamas production facility. Also yesterday, there was a car ramming and stabbing attack in Tel Aviv. Hamas claimed this attack, it seemed to have been a response to the activities in Jenin. So both of those incidents give us an indication that this could escalate and there could be a further response in other parts of the West Bank or Gaza or even inside of Israel. The Israelis are under no illusion that this one operation is going to end Jenin's sort of presence as a hotspot for militant activity. They said that they've tried to be precise and target only the militants and differentiate between combatants and civilians. But there's obviously a lot of anger inside of Jenin and across the Palestinian community at the way this was perpetrated.
Coming up, workplace diversity initiatives are facing renewed pressure following the Supreme Court's decision to eliminate affirmative action. Our look at the mood inside HR departments and much more after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Well before last week's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court to eliminate affirmative action, tension had been building within American workplaces over efforts to hire, retain, and advance diverse workers. But now, HR leaders have a considerably more challenging landscape to navigate. And Journal reporter Taping Chen joins me now to discuss how companies are contending with new pressure from both supporters and skeptics of diversity programs. Taping, your latest article is titled, "No One is Happy About Diversity Efforts at Work," and you've got data to back that up. What does it tell us?
Americans are very polarized over this issue. There are a lot of very strong and very differing views on the topic. When you look at the data, Pew, for example, recently did a survey and found that around half of folk think that their company's focus on increasing diversity at work is about right. But then you have 15% who say that they want the companies to be doing more, and another 14% who say their companies are doing too much. And a lot of that really breaks down along political lines as well as racial lines. And so you've got managers and companies trying to navigate this topic across a lot of, very strong feelings. And it's not an easy task.
It seems there's a bit of a trend that you picked up on in your reporting and that these public opinion polls are showing us that the momentum that had built up over the last few years behind DEI initiatives was already sort of beginning to flag a bit before this decision as well.
Yes, there was a recent summit even called the Diversity Fatigue Summit, which was attended by a lot of top HR execs from companies from Verizon to Xerox. It's only been 3 years since George Floyd's murder, but we have seen in the context of some economic headwinds and also just increasing sense of politicization and polarization that a number of companies have taken their foot off the gas pedal or have become a lot quieter on these issues.
In your reporting, there is also a March survey by the staffing company Kelly showing that just over a fifth of senior leaders said they were willing to host open conversations about diversity, which was down from 30% just last year. A sign, perhaps, that DEI programs, even where they do exist, may not always have deep, potentially lasting roots within companies, no?
That's right. In 2020, we saw such an outpouring of town halls, and we want to hear from you. We want to have these frank, courageous conversations. We spoke to a dozen chief diversity officers, current and former, who really were pretty vocal about what they've been seeing, which is more backlash in open forums, some much more combative and hostile questioning. and the feeling that these conversations are not being embraced in the same way, either from leadership and in many cases as well from rank and file.
And finally, we have been hearing from some legal experts in your reporting, from reporting from colleagues, that there may be legal challenges to some longstanding hiring and promotion practices coming. And yet the impression I get from all of this coverage is that even if a workplace policy is legal, businesses are far from out of the woods.
There's definitely the sentiment that the Supreme Court's ruling opens up businesses in a new way. Just knowing that the ruling landed in the way it did with affirmative action, the feeling that it's going to embolden a lot more people to feel like they could sue. That said, in speaking with lawyers as well as HR practitioners after the ruling dropped, there is also a feeling that, hey, this is still really early and we don't know yet how this is going to affect the corporate context, which is, of course, quite different. That said, there is something that a number of companies have voiced already and in advance of the ruling, which is just a strong concern that after this ruling, companies may face a less diverse pipeline of graduates, which is a source of tremendous concern. If you start winnowing out more diverse students, well, that inevitably will also change your pool of available talent, your pool of available future leaders. And that's something that also is top of mind for a number of companies.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Taping Chen. Taping, thank you so much for the update.
Thank you.
In other news moving the world today, a Kremlin spokesman has confirmed that Russia is engaged in discussions with the United States regarding potential prisoner exchanges, according to Russian media reports. The talks were prompted by consular visits to detained Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich and to Vladimir Dunayev, a Russian held in the U.S. The spokesman did not name any detainees and added that the discussions would not be made public. Gershkovich is being held on an allegation of espionage that he, the Journal, and the U.S. government vehemently deny. The market share for crypto exchange Binance's American arm fell to nearly zero in June, following a lawsuit from the Securities and Exchange Commission. The platform's U.S. market share was 20% just 2 months ago, and now Binance is also facing setbacks in Europe. French prosecutors have searched Binance's Paris headquarters as part of a money laundering investigation, and WSJ reporter Patricia Kausman says the Netherlands, Germany, and Belgium have shut their doors to the crypto giant.
Europe is always a market that is of interest for any company trying to be a global company. Binance grew into this crypto exchange, the largest in the world, basically by not having licenses. It struggles quite a lot to get this kind of licenses. In Europe, a lot of countries are saying they haven't met the threshold to actually get them. And in those countries, Binance is withdrawing and saying, okay, we are not going to get this registration right now because we're preparing for this other legislation, which will kick in late next year. That said, Binance is facing a lot of challenges right now. It has lawsuits in the U.S. It has a criminal investigation going on by the Department of Justice. It's become kind of a target for regulators, particularly in the U.S. And, of course, customers start getting a lot more worried about doing business with them.
In a relief to American car dealers and auto executives, U.S. automobile sales are expected to have jumped 12 to 14% over the first half of the year. That is far ahead of the pace that industry forecasters had expected heading into 2023. Kia, Nissan, and Honda have all reported strong first half sales in recent days, with more companies due to release sales later today, with Ford following tomorrow. Dealers and car executives are pointing to pent-up demand from shoppers who had remained on the sidelines in recent years amid vehicle shortages and high prices. And the world had its hottest day ever on Monday. That is according to scientists at the University of Maine's Climate Reanalyzer Project, who found the global daily average temperature for July 3rd came in at 17.01 degrees Celsius, or 62.6 degrees Fahrenheit. While seemingly not that hot, it is the first time in 44 years that the temperature surpassed the 17 degrees Celsius mark. While the global record is preliminary, pending approval from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, it is an indication of global warming reaching new heights. And finally, let's face it, telemarketing calls are annoying. But until now, getting revenge against the endless cold calls was as time-consuming as it was cathartic. However, a new slate of AI-powered services could change that, thanks to bots that are capable of intercepting calls from so-called bad numbers, speaking in your place, and talking scammers in circles. Here is one of those bots in action from a company called Jolly Roger.
So what do you think, how much you own your credit cards collectively?
Well, let's see. So many of them, you know. There's one with a picture of a kitten on it, and another with a lovely beach scene. Do you like kittens or beaches? I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Journal reporter Robert McMillan spoke to Jolly Roger founder Roger Anderson about how the service came about.
We've been hearing a lot of stories about how AI could potentially threaten humanity or could be abused for disinformation or spam. And here was something where AI was actually doing something that I think most of us would consider to be good. And it was kind of funny because he had to convince the AI that it should do what he wanted it to do. In other words, he had to talk to the ChatGPT and GPT-4 AI systems and explain to them what he wanted them to do. And at first, they were kind of reluctant to do his bidding, but he eventually convinced them that it was something that they could do. And now he's automated this whole system where the AI figures out what the call is about and then comes up with some responses and then speaks it back to the scammer all within just a couple of minutes.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with the news show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.